Hello, space junkies, and welcome to episode 113 of What a Piece of Junk, the Star Wars podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Scott Bultman, and I am back to 100% operating power, which is great so that I can send a secret message to my original podcast co-pilot, Mr. Derek Marsh. Derek, how's it going?
It is going good. Except I think you sent me your virus. So since now I've got it, so we're just passing the hot potato around.
I'm such a giving person. I just can't turn it off.
It's okay. I don't blame you. As we were talking beforehand, I just blame it on the crazy weather and whatever other things out there. So, but it's not terrible, but it's just one of those things that sinus infections are annoying and I've got the voice, so that shouldn't be much of an issue, but I just got this annoying cough. I've had a cough drop, so if I have to, hopefully I will catch myself and mute myself, but I apologize to any of the listeners, as well as poor Scott, because, he's got me in his ear right now. So,
Yeah, so
hopefully
literally,
I'll catch
since I'm
myself.
rocking the ear beans from Samsung.
Yes. But you can see that it's just going to be Scott and I this week, since apparently every one of us is having something to do every other weekend right now. So, but we're still making it go. This is like the first time in a long time where we've had like two shows running right now in the
Yes.
Star Wars world. So
We
it's
are
awesome.
feasting on Star Wars content, so we're going to jump right into it because we have a lot to discuss. Of course, kicking things off with what I would consider the marquee show right now for Star Wars, and that is, of course, The Mandalorian. So this week's episode was The Foundling, and in great Dave Filoni tradition, the title has multiple interpretations. For me, Derek, it is talking about the little baby birds that got rescued because they literally said, "And we found several more foundlings for you," when they
Yes.
talked to the armorer. I don't know. What does the title mean to you this week?
It's a little bit of everything, right? Because you've got the baby birds, as you mentioned at the end of the episode. We get the foundling himself, Ragnarok or Ragnar.
Yes.
Ragnar, so Pre Vizsla's child.
Right.
And he was a foundling, and they had to go rescue him. And we get a little bit more of backstory on Grogu himself, Baby
Yes,
Yoda.
the original foundling, as it were, for us in this series. Yeah,
Yes.
so
Well, I
speaking
don't know.
of
Would you we could would you consider that, or would you consider Din Djarin still technically the original foundling? I mean, even though he's older, but he would be a foundling, and he
so
technically was on the screen first.
he definitely was a foundling, but we didn't know that he was a foundling until later on. We knew that Grogu was a foundling earlier
Okay,
because we had to wait for some flashback stuff to be revealed about Din in season one. That's my
yes,
story, and I'm sticking to it.
that's fine. Well, I can tell you, Grogu's got better flashback stories.
Oh my gosh, does he have? So that's the perfect segue into the five questions. Number one, I'm gonna go first. What
That's
did you
fine because
like
I know what
most?
it is.
Yeah, what did you like most about this episode? Kellerman Beck, baby. Oh my
I'm
gosh, that was
invest,
so
I'm
cool.
invest.
Yes.
So. Our
Yes.
original, we were debating whether or not we were going to talk like Missa this whole time would be like this, but I don't
Right.
think we one with my voice I'd be able to last that long, and
Right.
but two, I don't think our listeners would have gone much further than the first minute and probably turned us off. So,
Yeah. Even more so than they already do that.
yes, yeah, that's true.
But no, it was so great to see Ahmed Best back, and help me out. I haven't looked this up because I was trying to see if I could get, old school Star Wars fan credit by remembering it. Is this character, Kelleran Beck, is that the same name of the guy that Ahmed Best played on that Jedi Trials game show thing for kids where Ahmed was the host and he was a Jedi? Was he Jedi Master Kelleran Beck?
He was a Jedi, but I don't know what the name of the character was. That's a good trivia question
They
we could Google
may not have
fool.
named him, actually.
So, probably not, because it was more in the moment, right? But then again, I mean, it was, kids LARPing as younglings, so
They
maybe.
were.
And
Yeah,
it
it
would
was.
make perfect sense. I mean, consider he was protecting the the younglings, so so it's just it's really sweet, bittersweet in some aspects, right? Because at the end of the day, he obviously can't survive, You know, the fact that he does save probably at this point now, other than the poor little, you know, Master Anakin, you know, they're coming to get us.
That poor kid. Yeah, right.
He's going to be memed forever. Yeah. Other than that, you know, Grogu's probably the most famous, not only now foundling under Scott's dictionary, but also the most famous youngling.
That's right.
So even though he's 50 years old, so I don't know if we can classify him as youngling anymore. So.
Well, you know, he's young for his crew, his race, I suppose. Yeah. But yes, it was so cool to see Kelleran Beck, Ahmed Best, getting to do lightsaber stuff. And he was pretty good at it. I thought he killed it in this role. He was a cute.
He was definitely a lot more capable than some of the other Jedi that seemed like, oh, this is clone trooper. Psh, I'm dead.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then, of course, he did the cool, you know, speeder bike chase scene. I mean, he was action hero Ahmed Best. It was really great. Yes. And we did not see him die in the flashback. No. So there's a possibility that we could see more of Jedi Master Kelleran Beck or Jedi Knight. I don't know. Maybe is he a master? We'll have to look that up.
No, anyway. He may not even be a Jedi Knight. He might still be, in theory, could be, you know, just
somebody's Padawan. Yeah,
I don't want to say Padawan, but what happens when a Jedi kind of gets stuck in between a Padawan and a Knight, and they just become like maybe like a serve, like, you know, they serve under the council, and, you know, they do it like they never quite reach knighthood, like the librarian, right? I don't think she ever became a Jedi Knight, but she was a youngling at some point, right? She went through the stuff, right?
So. Well, we know that Obi-Wan was still a Padawan when they took on Anakin in The Phantom Menace. So,
well, I still feel like he was supposed to be like in his early 20s, though. I don't think he was supposed to be in his 30s, like he was portrayed by Ewan McGregor, but it's possible, right?
That's what I'm saying, though. We don't know how long. I mean, maybe obviously some initiates take longer to progress through the trials.
Well,
than
don't
others.
Forget, Dooku was even counting Qui-Gon as his Padawan. He still referred to him as his Padawan, right? Yeah. So, even though Qui-Gon was technically a master,
right? Yeah.
He could even sit on the council, as Obi-Wan said, but, you know, he was a wild spirit. So
he was a wild card. Yes, totally. So. All right. Well, Derek, what was your favorite part of the episode? I mean, obviously it could be Ahmed Best.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Ahmed Best. I mean, we could go on and on about that. I mean, just super kudos, the love from the fans, the appreciation, and the fact that, you know, because apparently I didn't realize this too. He did play another character in Attack of the Clones. He was a bar patron. Mm-hmm. In there, so, you know, so you actually got to see him under Jar Jar Binks. But there's a lot of people that didn't realize that, because there's a funny meme, you know, where they have the Leonardo DiCaprio, where he's like pointing at the screen from what was the name of the movie, the
Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time. Yes, yes. So there's a funny picture where it's got, you know, Ahmed Best as the Jedi, and the next one's got Leonardo DiCaprio doing it, but his head's replaced by Jar Jar.
Yeah,
and he's pointing at the screen.
At the screen like, hey, I know that guy. Yeah, Lisa, know that guy.
So, and I said that to my I guess he'd be considered my cousin-in-law, because he married my cousin. So I guess second cousin, I guess, however they refer to it. But anyways, he's obviously not a huge Star Wars fan, but, you know, obviously like the originals. And he's obviously really appreciate the Mandalorian. He liked Andor, but he still thinks the Mandalorian's the better show. And I was like, that's good. Yeah. But anyways, when I sent him that, he's like, is that the same guy who played Jar Jar? I was like, yeah. So it's just great. Right. And so it's appreciative that us hardcore fans, like I said, get to see him return. So, but other than that, I mean, it was a fun episode. It's going to be interesting as we go through this, since the last episode was taking place on Coruscant with, you know, everything with Ella Kane and with Dr. Pershing.
Dr. Pershing, yeah.
You know, what are we going to get in this, right? Is that just a taste of potential future things and just trying to tie it together? Is it just going to be, you know, obviously, as we talked about, there's still Moff Gideon around. So, again, are we going to kind of go back and forth like a full episode? Or we can eventually get what we did like in season 1 and 2, where it was kind of going back and forth, right, between the good guys and the bad guys, where it felt like it was more one show, right? So, you know, anyways, yeah, like I said, overall, it was just a really fun episode. I would say, again, the armor and the coven there, I don't know why they happened to pick that spot. Like, right? You think they would have done some reconnaissance of the area, because now within a matter of like a week, they've been attacked by a giant alligator, which is apparently another one because it ate then the mother bird that attacked them, pterodactyl, right? So apparently they, you know, and they aren't really good. If it wasn't for Mando and Bo-Katan, man, like they would all be dead.
But what if, a la, you know, Klingons, they picked this place because it was super dangerous.
Because they're like predators, like, and that's how they get points. Like,
yeah, we gotta, you know, iron sharpens iron, right? We gotta, you know, make ourselves tougher by bending this incredible wasteland to our will, right?
I guess.
That's kind of there was a little bit of a hint to this is how Mandalorians work, because last episode, maybe the one before that.
Maybe the one before that, because Coruscant was pretty much the one before that.
Other than when Din was on Mandalore, and then Bo-Katan had to come save him from the weird cyborg spider guy. She fights those. We had the
name. Those like the towels. Things.
But with she fights Aubrey's or whatever they were. Anyway, and she says, she says, I can't believe those things are still alive. I thought nothing was still alive on Mandalore. We used to have those, quote, out in the wastelands beyond our cities. So even Mandalore had these, like, you know, do not go there, Taylor. It is the forbidden zone, right? And you'd have, obviously, you go out there and you prove your mettle. You know, you survive a week's camp out in the wastelands, and you come back, and now you're a full Mandalorian or something.
Which I'm okay with, but you would think, because they're a small coven, like half of them are foundlings, right? And they're trying to train them. Obviously, they're not very good because Grogu just, you know, wipes the floor in them with paintball gun.
Right?
And then they instead of like picking like an easy camp site to start off with, like a level 2 or 3, maybe they went to like 10, you know, or level 9. Like they're like, oh, we're experts, you know.
It's
like
ours goes to 11,
you know. Yeah, and it's not like the armor is like the almighty NPC that sits there and like they attack it and she just goes nuts and everything. Like she raises her hand like one time. Other than that, she's just like, you guys all handle it. I can do it, but I'm just gonna wait.
I'm just saying, I think, though, they picked this planet and specifically that little alcove on purpose because it's super deadly.
I guess the armor XP level must be outweighing the rest of it, right? She's just trying to carry the rest of the noobs.
Yes. So, honorable mention for my favorite thing about this episode was the joke at the beginning with Grogu, because you see him sitting there with all those rocks. And they're vaguely sliding and moving. And you're like, oh, Grogu's doing the Force thing, right? He's all sometimes it is about lifting rocks. But then it turns out that they're crabs and he was just trying to get a snack. Yes. I loved it. I was like, yes.
I mean, it's back to what he does best, right? Eating. Yeah, so
that's right. So. Okay. I mean, all right.
So what don't you like about this episode?
Yeah. So then, Scott? What did I dislike about this episode? I think a little bit about what you talked about with regard to the why are they camping in such a dangerous place, but it was more when we got to the part where Bo-Katan was all, I'm going to lead the rescue expedition because I used to bullseye womp rats in my T-16. I mean, I used to climb rocks like this back home, which I was fine with that. But then when they finally got to the nest, they were all like, okay, we know that Paz Vizsla's son is in danger and the thing is probably going to eat him if we move too quickly. But also, you know, we want to rescue him. However, we need to make camp for the night. I'm like, is this a rescue mission or is it like a, you know, a merit badge quest?
I mean, no joke. He would be dead by now. Let's be honest.
It's like, listen, Paz, I know your son is like, you know, on the menu for the pterodactyl, but speaking of menus, and then, you know, let's have a camp out and a cookout. Yeah. I was like, really? We're going to take a little break? It was kind of like a bad D&D session where the party gets to the final boss, but they're all like right in front of the doorway to the last chamber of the dungeon. And everybody take a long rest.
It would have been fine, too, like if it would have been like, you know, at nighttime, it's like Super Saiyan mode or something like that. Mm-hmm. They would have known something, right? And it's like, don't worry, they only eat in the morning, so your son's going to be okay. Even though, surprisingly, it's been sitting in the giant bird's stomach this whole time as it gargles him up. So apparently they don't have stomach acids.
That's right. He wasn't even in the nest. He was, like, still being carried. It's like, you know, this was his Jonah and the whale moment for Paz Vizsla's son. And then, you know, he hacks him up and Paz is like, hey, my son's alive.
Yeah, anyway. So I'm with you on that one. Like, Filoni and Favreau, and actually, I think it was, well, I mean, they wrote the story too, but it was actually Carl Weathers who directed this episode.
He did, yes, which is pretty cool in and of itself.
Yeah, which is great. But it's kind of like, come on, guys, let's keep it a little bit more paced up. Like, you don't need to waste our time. Like, okay, we were complaining that the episodes are too short, but if you're going to fill them with stupid stuff, I'd rather it be a short episode.
I liked what we learned during the campout scene.
Yes.
Because we get the cool scene with Bo-Katan going, wait, how are we supposed to eat if we can't take off our helmet? And then finally, Din Djarin answers a question we've all had since we first learned about the whole I never take off my helmet thing. It's like, how do you eat? And also, can you take it off if nobody sees you? And the answer is yes and yes. So he was all like, you know, go off where nobody can see you, away from the fire, and, you know, find a place to eat with your helmet off. And then, of course, Paz tells Bo-Katan that since she's the leader of the expedition, she gets the honorable space of sitting by the fire with her helmet off, which was kind of cool. Yeah. Although it does kind of beg the question, she just recently joined their whole group, but now she's in charge. I guess partly I can explain that by she's Mandalorian royalty.
Yeah, well, it's kind of cool, right? If you think about it, like, she's got all these XP medals that she's had saved up, and now that she's, you know, reinvigorated with the coven, then she's able to, you know, reapply them. So she's got all those medals she can now wear, and they all have to respect them. Before, she could flash them, and they said, that doesn't mean anything because you're not, you know, part of the way. So now they're like, oh, we got to pay attention. So
yeah, so she's back on the walk in the way, but also she is a literal Mandalorian princess. So there you go.
Yes.
So all right. So well, what did you dislike most about this episode?
I mean, just like I said, just the bird scene itself just kind of felt like a little weird. Like the whole, like when the bird goes off, okay, it's like planet though must be like super scoured though, because it had to like fly forever to find food for its kids. Because then it's like flying away. They're chasing it with its rockets, and then they never catch up to it. And they're like, oh, well, okay. And then luckily Bo-Katan's got the ship. And then it's like, okay, like, I don't understand this. Like, she could have like said, hop in.
Right?
and then they could have gone the rest of the way and gotten it. And while it's flying, they could have been like, okay, we're going to get real close. I'm going to shoot it. Because, you know, it's by its feet. So she should have been able to have better shooting at a big freaking bird. It's not like it's a little eagle that's carrying something, right? And it's like the size of Ragnar. She could have shot the bird. And while he's falling, they could have, you know, because apparently they defy gravity, they could have gotten their jetpacks and saved him.
Yeah.
And we would have saved, you know, 10 minutes. Now, granted, yes, we wouldn't have had this great conversation. We're still pending, though. Do they remove their masks when they're married and have sex? That's the one question we still have.
No, we know the answer to that, because remember in season one, crazy purple Twi'lek girl joked around about Din taking off his mask when they were, you know, doing the deed.
Oh, okay.
His ex-girlfriend implied that you and your lover can, you know, be face to face.
Okay. Fair enough then. Okay. Yeah, so we are three for three then. All the important questions have now been answered. So,
Yep.
All right. But yes, like I said, just that, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I said, it was a fun episode. There was good things about it, but if we're just going to nitpick, like I said, that could have been executed a little bit better to fill some better gaps and, you know, not been. Because like I said, to me, it's like you flew that whole way, so it had to be multiple days. Your kids got to be hungry, and then you just come up and, you know, oh well, it's gonna wait because it doesn't fly in the dark or something, you know. And then the poor thing, they finally, you know, like I would have thought, in Din, like when they're flying, would have gone out and gotten the freaking dark saber and actually use that to fly across the thing and cut off its wings, rather than let's just use these little daggers. I'm like, you've got a lightsaber.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Maybe saved already. Just finish the bird.
Maybe he's still worried about, you know, looking
chopping off his own arm.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't want to look stupid in front of all the other Mandos because he can't use the dark saber very well.
Yeah. So anyways, nitpicking it, but yeah.
Okay. Number three, what connections did you draw to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy?
I mean, we've kind of talked about it already with the whole Mandalorians and where they're camping out, right? We've talked a little bit about the things. It was interesting. Obviously, then we've seen the original Boba Fett riding the Mythosaur in the holiday special. We've seen Boba Ride the Rancor, which we'll talk a little bit later at the end here. And then we talked about, you know, with the legend of the Mythosaur, because Bo-Katan right now, she's, you know, praised Allah because she's seen the vision. Right. And then so now with the birds coming at the end here, then apparently they really like to ride animals. So
yes, it's a big Mandalorian thing, yes, to tame beasts and ride them, apparently.
So yes, so then that's going to be cool. So we'll see. Hopefully, you know. So
yeah, and for me, it was, again, sticking with the Mythosaur. But in this case, when Bo-Katan went to go talk to the Armorer, gosh, I hope we get a name for the Armorer someday soon. Anyway.
That's your name, the Armorer.
Right. When she went to go talk to her, she was all like, I've lost part of my armor. And the Mythosaur is going to be Bo-Katan's other, you know, signet, as it were, on her replacement armor plate. I did also like that the Armorer made sure to tell Bo-Katan, I can't replace your shoulder pad with all of the modern technology that it had in it, because it's thus implying that the stuff that the Armorer is making on her little, you know, portable forge is nowhere near as advanced as the kind of stuff that Jango Fett, Boba Fett, and to a certain degree Mando had in other fight scenes where we see them use their armor to do cool stuff. So the shoulder pad that is now on Bo-Katan's right shoulder doesn't have the, you know, microcircuitry and the headset integrated stuff. And so I'm often wondering if the writers are leaving it open as to what exactly all the capabilities of modern Mandalorian armor are, so that later when we need one of their shoulder pads or chest plates to have some sort of micro thing in it that can, you know, repel a lightsaber or deflect blaster bolts, or
shoot whistling birds,
or shoot whistling birds out of that segment of the armor, or at least, you know, like maybe at some point Mando is going to be down for the count, but then his chest plate has like an automatic defibrillator built into it, but then Grogu's doesn't because he has an old school chest plate and mithril shirt. Excuse me.
And he got his first piece from the armor too. He's upgraded.
Yeah. So clearly that is going to be Chekhov's chest plate, right? Later this season, Grogu's going to take one right in the chest, and everybody on screen is going to be like, oh no, the baby's dead. But then all the fans will be like, oh, he's got the thing. And we'll all be doing our Leonardo DiCaprio. Oh, yeah. And pointing at the screen.
Or we'll be comparing it to Frodo in the cave troll.
Yeah, the cave troll. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, come on, we're going to do that anyway, because he's got the best car shirt.
So,
hearing Bo-Katan talk to the Armorer about the Mythosaur was a great connection to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy, and then also a spiritual moment for the two of them, because you can tell that the Armorer is kind of all like, yeah, sure, you
saw, yeah, like she didn't want to believe her that the Mythosaur
totally
was real.
Happened. She kept trying to tell her, maybe, honey, it was a vision from the Force.
There's a lot of decompressed air when you're down that far.
That's it. You had the bins, or we're running out low on the
OG. Which would be interesting, though, because maybe that's what we're supposed to think. Maybe there is a Mythosaur, and it's really not. She just thinks she has a vision, right?
Yeah. But I think that Bo-Katan herself is convinced that that was a real live Mythosaur, and that's part of what gave her her, you know, come to Mandalore moment, as it were.
Yep. No, I mean, to me, it's going to be it, right? I mean, we're going to have it, and it's either going to be, like I said, who's the Mythosaur for, as we talked about in our last episode, right? Is it going to be for Din? Is it going to be for Bo-Katan? Is it going to be for Grogu? Is it going to be for who I think it's going to be, for Boba Fett?
But I think it's for Bo-Katan. I do, yeah.
So you think she'll get the Darksaber?
Yes, I think Bo will end up with the Darksaber at the end of the season, actually. Mm-hmm. And speaking of the end of season 3, question 4, will we see those baby birds grow big enough for Mando and friends to ride them in the finale of this season, a la the Rancor in the finale of Book of Boba Fett? Derek, what do you think?
I don't think we will, just because I don't think, I mean, what do we have, 4 more episodes left at this point, or 3 more episodes, 4 episodes, right?
I think 4, yeah.
Because it's just a total of 8. So, yeah. So I unless they're going to have a really big time gap, because I don't think that those birds are clones and going to be able to grow huge in a few days. So, I mean, that'd be interesting to find out if they were clones, but because it would all tie back, right? So, but yeah. I don't think so. I mean, I think eventually we'll get to see them probably at the beginning of season 4, when there will be a time gap.
That would be kind of cool for them to be a bridge between seasons. But I'm going to counter predict you here and say that there will be enough of a time gap for Mando and Grogu and friends to go, that they'll leave to go do something else with Bo-Katan, and then they'll come back X number of months later. And the things, it'll be like, they grow really quickly as children and then they level off. And so they'll be big enough for Mando and friends to ride them for some reason in the finale.
Now, if you were to say, is it just Grogu who rides it? Then I could believe it. Because then that would be, that would be very plausible right now.
Because of the size of the birds, that would be plausible. And secondly, we know that Grogu kind of has the same power that Ezra does about using the Force to talk.
Well, so does Ahsoka.
And so does Ahsoka. Yeah.
Yeah. So that I could definitely see, if you wanted to say Grogu specifically, I could see that by the end of the season. Because like the armor will be having like, it'll be like the whole, Black Beauty type deal thing where she's the wild one, blah, blah, blah. And then here comes Grogu and the armor will be like, oh, okay. You know, that I could see happen.
That would be cool. I could also see there. A case of where Bo and Mando and friends are in trouble and something happens to the N1 Starfighter. Speaking of things, I hope get names. I hope he gets another name for his ship. Anyway, it's like crashed or whatever, and they need it to escape or to go rescue somebody, and they can't get it to work. And then Grogu shows up with all three of the birds like under his thrall, and the little baby birds like latch onto it and fly it.
Or something. Yeah,
they pull it up out of the swamp or the water or whatever. And we get Grogu doing the Master Yoda size.
Well, he's got to do the little force hand.
He's doing the magic hand to control the birds and lifting the starfighter.
There you go. Or even better yet. Mando goes back to, I don't know, where did they bury him at? To go get the remains of Quill and go back to the beginning of episode 1 and get IG-11 and he combines them together. And then they get like half Quill, half IG-11, and then he goes and trains the birds.
Yes, robot Quill. Cyber Quill. All right. Okay. And you've got question 5 here.
So question 5, do you think we're done with Mandalore already this season?
No, I don't. I think that we'll go back for some reason. If no other reason, then Bo-Katan will want to go to prove to herself whether she saw that mythosaur or not.
I'm with you, but at the same time, I just feel like there's, it just depends on where they're going to go with this season. Cause like I said, you only got 4 more episodes, and I feel like, if you think about it, they're going to have like either Moff Gideon's going to be the end of the season, right? The big reveal. Oh, Moff Gideon's back, just like he was at the beginning of our season 1, where he was kind of at the end, right? So I assume he's going to make, that'll be the big reveal at the end of 7, and they'll have a whole episode 8, or that'll just be the big reveal at the end of episode 8. So that's only really leaving you about 3 episodes. There's a possibility, but then are they going to do anything else with Coruscant? Again, or we just, that was a one-off, and then again, it's going to tie to other stuff because, again, we've got this whole tie to everything they've done from, episodes or the sequel trilogy. You got everything going on right now with the Bad Batch with cloning, obviously everything from the prequels as well, but just all that. Are they going to have a tie-in to Ahsoka at some point, like an actual tie-in before that season series starts? Or was this when we had, season 2 and season 2.5 of, well, technically Book of Boba, but I call it season 2.5 with Ahsoka?
I think the Coruscant storyline and the Rebels nod with the Purrgil in cyberspace and going back to Mandalore will all culminate because Ahsoka will make an appearance. In fact, we might have a situation where the reason they go back to Mandalore is that Ahsoka is there and she sends a message to Bo-Katan. And that's because they need some piece of something to help them go find Ezra. And the reason that they're on Mandalore is because that piece was left in the ruined house of... Any guesses? She of the purple hair?
It's Clan Wren.
Yes, of Sabine Wren. And that'll be our live-action Sabine Wren introduction. It's during this episode of Mandalorian. Maybe. And so they'll go back to Mandalore, and Bo-Katan, Ahsoka, and Sabine will all be there to talk about, we need this artifact to help us find Ezra. And then Din will be standing there going, who the hell is Ezra? And then we, as the audience who doesn't know a darn thing about Rebels, we'll get an exposition moment that makes sense of, well, Ezra is this dude who
that
does
seems
that.
Like a lot to throw at us, but I mean, they could. I mean, that could be a single episode. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, that's just a lot to throw in.
Not only too much, but it might, that what I just described is maybe a little too fan fiction-y. Like, that sounds like a bad fan fiction now that I sit and think about it, because it's all, ooh, and cameo from this one, and cameo from that one.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, the way they've been doing this stuff, that's a very good possibility, because
yeah.
I'm only fearful that they're, because like I said, I still think Skeleton Crew is going to have some tie-in as well, too. Mm-hmm. So
I do, too, because I believe Dave Filoni has said something that has been interpreted, because that's how he works, as indicating a giant crossover event at some point in the future. That includes,
which you got the CW now. So.
Skeleton Crew. Yes, now we're Crisis on Infinite Mandalores. Anyway.
Well, as I say, we've had so much Tatooine that they finally got rid of Tatooine. Now we're just going to have it all on Mandalore. So, and I'm okay with that. It's a new thing.
Why does everybody want to go back to Jakku? Right. Anyway. Okay. All right. Well, that wraps up our discussion of The Foundling. Of course, we're all looking forward to next week's episode of The Mandalorian. We'll take a quick break so you guys can find out more about the Fandom Podcast Network and then come back and talk a little Bad Batch.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right. Thanks so much, Kevin. We hope you guys can check out some of those other shows. Okay, so let's jump into some Bad Batch discussion from the episode Tipping Point. Derek, what did you like most about this episode?
So I liked it from the fact, again, our notorious crew is not involved in this, but we get to see Rex and Echo and the other team, because technically Echo is no longer a Bad Batch member. He's former, but he's no longer a Bad right. Batch member.
But don't tell Omega that. She'll be very upset.
Omega. anyways, yeah, we get to see them in a little bit of action here, right? So that was cool. I really like that, to see like how they're saving the clones, you know, that we talked about, you know, that we thought this whole season was really going to have a bigger focus on. I mean, it's kind of there, but it feels like a lot of these mm-hmm. filler episodes are wasting precious moment when we could have got more of that. Because to me, that they could have built a little bit more storyline off of it, because this was just a quick one. Like, they only saved three clones, if you think about it, right? Was there more clones on there that they just didn't get them, or were there other, you know, other things? Because as you know, Hauser talked about it, right? He's like, there's a bunch that left before me and they never came back, right?
Yeah,
and we probably got another Senator Chuchi, so.
Right. I don't think there were any more clones on this particular transport that they raided in this episode, but Hauser is definitely telling them they have arrested a lot more clones and shipped them off to wherever. Well, in fact, we know where some of them are, because later in this very episode, Crosshair sees other clones locked up at Mount Tantus. So there you go.
Well, and kudos to the Empire because they're not transporting a whole bunch at one time. You'd think it'd be more cost efficient, right? Or most that, right? But at the end of the day, it's kind of like, well, where was the ship heading? Like, well, they were going to make a drop off, but they were en route to do some other deliveries or go to some other post, right? So they're keeping it well hidden. Only certain ones running this line probably or certain ships are doing it so that they keep the numbers in few of who are actually doing the cloning process here. But in itself, though, like I said, we're transporting a few at a time. So,
yeah, they're keeping it on the down low so that people won't notice as much. It's a bunch of little atrocities like what's his name from Andor said in his manifesto. I can't think of his name, but, you know, the communist dude. So he's like, it's a bunch of little atrocities instead of one giant one to keep you from being able to adjust. But yes, I agree with you. My favorite part of this episode involves the first segment, as it were, the big awesome space battle of rescuing Hauser and the other two clones. It was great to see Fireball again and cool to see Echo doing stuff. And then also Gregor. Gregor was one of the clones that was helping with the rescue mission. So it's really cool to see essentially the wolf pack from Rebels, but when they're younger and still really action hero-y, you know.
Yeah, because do we see Gregor actually in the Clone Wars at all? Other than, does he have an episode or two? Or not really? Because Wrecker was the same way, too. We didn't really know them until we actually got Bad Batch episodes when we saw Wrecker. So
we need Nathan here for the Filoni mind. We'll ask him. Maybe we'll remember to ask him next episode. Yeah. Or, you know, if any fan out there knows the answer to this, just email me at whatapieceofjunkpod@gmail.com or post in the Facebook group, What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast on Facebook. And we can then tell you kudos to you for remembering Gregor's secret origin, because right now we can't think of it. But it was cool to see him.
There's just too many clones.
That's right. And they all look alike to me. but it was cool to see him as young Gregor instead of just old fishing Gregor.
So and now we realize Wrecker really was messed up this whole time. So
yes,
he just didn't get old and delusional. No, he's always been crazy. So what was your least favorite part about this episode, Scott?
My least favorite part was it's unrealistic. I understand why it happened storyline wise, but it was unrealistic to me that after Crosshair does his little attempt to escape and then sends the secret message to the Bad Batch on the base in Mount Tantus, that they didn't just summarily execute him. They locked him back up again. I know that they need him for interrogation and to get Omega to show up so that they can then blackmail Lian Su and all that stuff. But come on, the guy killed like 10 stormtroopers in that very base. Like, if you didn't then execute him, what kind of, you know, evil empire are we running here, people? Like, even the stormtroopers that are assigned to Mount Tantus might have revolted if he killed 10 of their buddies and faced, like, no repercussions in the way of capital punishment. I mean, that was just unrealistic. He's way too dangerous to keep him, no matter how well you have him secured. He should have been killed, like, during that whole,
yes and no, but the problem is if they kill him, then how do they get Omega there?
No, I get it. I understand that's the storyline reason, but I feel like that would have been, if you'll pardon the pun about the title of the episode, the tipping point where they realize he is never going to help us. He's way too dangerous. You know, we're talking about on The Mandalorian, the risk of that coven outweighing the rewards. The risk of Crosshair here outweighs any possible reward. Because, again, he killed 10 stormtroopers at least.
No argument. Logic dictates, right? We could do a whole Star Trek here. But honestly, that should have been what they wanted him to do, was send out the message.
Yeah.
And then kill him, because then you don't need him anymore.
Right. But I don't think Dr. Hemlock is anywhere near as devious as Palpatine. Well,
and it's not like Crosshairs is anything special about it either. Like, it would have been like, oh, he's like got the chosen clone DNA or something, right?
I mean, he's got that amazing marksmanship, but like, as the Kaminoans,
they can just pop his eyeballs out and clone those.
Right. But what I was going to say is, as the Kaminoans found out, just because the Bad Batch has one of these cool, desirable traits, it's not super easy to, like, you know, hit Xerox copy button and give the trait to other clones. They kept trying to do that on Kaminoa, and they couldn't.
Well, yeah, just imagine if the Bad Batch was all one clone.
Yeah. Like if they did a Fantastic Four thing with the Super Skrull, where you mix all the Fantastic Four powers together into one Super Skrull, hey, that's awesome. That's actually what the Kaminoans were trying to do. But again, they found out that strand casting, you know, genetics do not work that way.
Mutant DNA didn't work. So
yeah, genetics do not work that way. So. We don't have enough mutant. We don't know the secret of the ooze and the other Ninja Turtles can't give us their powers.
Token and Rezar. So,
oh my god, now that's a deep cut, brother. All right, okay.
Well, so I was going to tell you, mine was kind of piggybacking off yours. It was two sections. The first one, you were talking about it, and mine was, why didn't he kill the doctor lady? Like, he killed all those stormtroopers, but he didn't kill her. Like, okay, if you know you're not going to escape, at least kill, like, unless if he didn't kill her because she's actually on something and they're going to tag team and try and she's actually an agent. So that would be one case, right? So
for me, the reason he didn't kill her is way more pedestrian than that.
Because she's a girl.
Almost mundane.
Well, she has a face. She doesn't have a clone trooper helmet on. I've not seen Crosshair
kill any females. I just want to point that out. I don't know if that's necessarily supposed to be a character trait of his, but so far, I have not seen him kill any women. And I could be wrong. Maybe I forgot about one.
But maybe he killed women when they were on the Snow Mountain just a couple episodes ago, and how he ended up there with the rebels. They could have been women there.
It's possible. But I think if that were the case, he didn't know about it. Oh, no, you know what? You know what? I take it back. I think they killed some female rebels way back when the group first encountered Saw Gerrera and friends.
Maybe. But anyways, regardless though, it's like, come on, dude. Like she's telling you, it's like she's working on you. So like, if anything, at least cripple the Empire a little bit at this point, if you're going to turn rogue, right? You know, do something, you know, take out as much, you know, hierarchy if you can. Right. So anyways, that's the one. The other one was, even though it was really cool at the beginning with the whole rescue of the clones and the ship, battle and how they were doing and all that, that ship that the Rex and them were on moved way too fast. There's no way that they'd be able to deter and then and rehat and attach each other and then jump into hyperspace. There's no way that would have happened because it's not like it was even a, like, I'm not saying like X-Wings or Starfighters don't do that in some of the things, but they like go crash landing into it, right? It's not like that thing attaching and all that was just way too moving too fast for me. Especially with the bulkiness of it. I get it. It's Space Wizard physics. I get it. But, you know, overall, that was the only thing, because then it was just like nonchalant. It was like, you know, like, oh, if that thing can move that fast, then heck yeah. So, okay. But anyways, those were just a couple nitpick things.
Yeah. See, that's our Star Trek fandom creeping in again, because we see that kind of thing happening. We're like, this could never happen in Star Trek because, like, you know, there'd be all this talk about how the G forces alone and the inertia would do this, that, and the other. Because in Star Trek, they take a minute to tell us, don't worry, Captain, Data has reconfigured the polarity of the inertia dampeners, and we're fine. And then here they, of course, in Star Wars, we never do anything because it's an analog world, not a digital world. So the only thing they have as far as, you know, ship-to-ship transfer is these old-school, like, submarine-style pressure locks, right? And you're right. That should never have been able to work at that velocity.
Like, I would have been fine if it would have been, like, slow, and that would have made it, like, pressing. Like, we got to go because this is going to take us a minute to get back to the attach, right?
Yeah.
And, you know.
But or like, I would have also thought it was cool if they bailed on the leech vessel, and they left it behind, and Echo and Fireball just ran down the hall into the
They could have done that, too.
Into the chute. Instead of telling Gregor and them to bail, and we'll meet you later. What?
Yeah. Anyways, so nitpicking the stuff, which, you know, actually has been quite odd because there's usually been a lot more stuff I have more to rant about Bad Batch lately. But hey, take it a win. So
yeah, exactly. All right, number three, what connections did you draw to the rest of the Star Wars galaxy?
I mean, you talked a little bit about, like, Gregor, right? And how we got to do that. As I was talking earlier, just trying to remember this episode because watched it first thing in the week and it's been 5 days and trying to go through it. It's like, okay, what to connect, you know, and all this stuff. And it's just like, I think about, you know, again, more with it was interesting, the poison gas, and that how You know, obviously, like we get with like episode one, right, with Qui-Gon and
the diapsis,
Obi-Wan, yeah, you know, all that stuff. But it was interesting though that the doctor was like immune. He's like, it's my own concoction, and I've done, you know, I've been immune to it. And the first thing I think of is like Princess Bride.
Yeah. I've spent the last 10 years building up an immunity to diapsis. I liked that too, because the guy's name is Dr. Hemlock, and he hasn't done any poison stuff yet. I'm like, come on, we're missing a real opportunity here. And he has that like old Hammer horror nod here, where he's like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of thing, or Dr. Frankenstein even, in that, you know, of course he's immune to this poison that he made because it's his, you know, super toxic brew.
Well, I almost think he looks like, I can't remember the name of the character, but Gary Oldman played him in The Fifth Element.
Oh, yeah, that guy. I can't think of his name either.
But he acts just like him, too. Like, all he needs is, like, half his hair to be buzzed off.
Yeah, the skull plate, yeah. And then when he's talking to Palpatine, the black goop starts pouring out of his forehead. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Anyway, for me, the major connection was during Crosshair's interrogation, the classic Ball ITO evil interrogator droid.
Oh, yeah, it's the Hypno.
Yeah, he's going to hit him with the sodium pentothal, yes. Truth serum, or whatever. That was
typo syringe.
There you go. Thank you, Star Wars CCG. Good times. I will now start asking my opponent questions.
Would be cool if that card actually did something. Like, hey, you hit this, and you know you can actually, you know, see your.
It does do that. Am I hallucinating?
All right, does it do that where it shows your opponent's hand? I'm looking up now. I don't think it did that. Okay, I'll look it up while you go through the next one.
Yeah, okay. So question number four, I'll go ahead and answer it even though I came up with it while Derek scans 30-year-old trading cards. What did Hauser and the other clones do exactly to get them arrested by the Empire? I mean, the broad answer here is insurrection, right? Because they're somehow helping the rebels. Because we know that Hauser and them are, you know, we saw Hauser be all like, peace out. I can't stand for this evil to be happening again. It was good to see that he was still alive, because in my mind, there was a possibility that he had been killed off screen. It was cool to see him come back, because I like his armor. I think his clone armor was really cool. It'll be interesting to see how many of the clone troopers that have joined the rebels and become insurrectionists get some cool new type of armor to help them be rebels, because we don't see a lot of armored rebel troops in other Galactic Civil War era stories. But in this case, Hauser and them have like, you know, marquee signature suits of armor. So it'd be cool to see if they all get to keep them. Obviously, Fireball still had his, or a variation of it. So that was neat. And Gregor is still wearing something close to, you know, what we expect him to wear as a clone trooper.
Most of them, we don't get to see a whole lot at this point in time, to your point, right? Most rebels throughout it are just like, they're mostly just like what we see like in Rogue One, right? Where it's just
Scrubby, like
mercenary looking stuff, right? Maybe it's like camouflaged or a flight suit, or all black, right? So,
So my theory about what Hauser and these other two clones did was they were somehow raiding a supply depot. They were getting weapons or armor or both or some kind of tech to take to other, you know, defectors, other insurrectionists, if not other clone troopers, at least other rebels of some kind. And they got captured. They got busted somehow. Or maybe they were trying to do, you know, some kind of commando raid and use their old school access codes and stuff like we've seen the Bad Batch do every so often. In fact, I remember in season one, a couple of times Tech was like, you really think they'd change the access codes every so often? Because we can still use our old stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my theory. I don't know. What do you think Hauser and the gang did, Derek?
Well, let me first go back to our question. So the hippo, yes. Deploy on your IT-0 once during your control phase, if present with a captive or with an imprisoned captive. You may ask one yes or no question about cards in opponent's hand. Opponent must answer truthfully or lose one force, or you may add one force to a force trait. So
boom.
You were right. So
good times.
I never used it. So, you know.
Now I want to play it later this year when we do our gathering in Greensboro, hopefully.
So, yeah, maybe the PC will make an actual legit use out of it then, right?
Well, now that we've seen it on screen in the Bat Batch,
it
increases the chances of that happening.
So, to talk about Hauser, honestly, I didn't think much about this. So, I mean, it's an interesting question. You know, really, I just thought like he was just asking too many questions. just like every other clone's been doing, right? Then they're like, you know, these little pockets all over, you know, and they're getting at bars and they're meeting after hours, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And like you said, that they're kind of being decommissioned and it's kind of like, okay. And, you know, anything that they're doing. And I, really, to me, honestly, it seems like the Empire doesn't even really need an excuse anymore just to arrest them, right?
Yeah, so, it's like we'll come up with some trumped up charges.
Yeah, they'll just make up something, right? So so really that's you know, not much more. So but I mean, I like your theory. It's cool. So I think that you know, they're already starting to try to help each other in a sense. Which is surprising. You would think at this point, I mean, I guess there's probably still some clones that are kind of like under the crosshairs impersonation, but a majority of them by now, I mean, because we gotta be like at least what? I don't think we're a year, 2 years post Revenge of the Sith, or like 6 months. I mean, at least 6 months, but I would think we're maybe a year or two in at this point. You know, it's hard to say, right? Because I feel like that's been a continued question. It's like, okay, where are we really at in the timeline? Because I don't feel like we're at the point where the Empire is that bad, right? I mean, obviously, you know, we don't actually get the Senate, you know, absolved until actually A New Hope, and you don't have Scarif and Rebels. Rebels is only taken, you know, 4 or 5 years prior. Andor's, you know, 4 or 5 years prior to A New Hope. So I feel like, you know, we got to be pretty infancy post Revenge of the Sith. But again, they were smart, unlike the New Republic that we talked about. They actually use the stuff, even though, I mean, I know they're getting rid of the clones and stuff, but they're using everything else, and they've already been pre-making it, so it was already disposed of, unlike the New Republic, who's disposing of all the Empire stuff, and that's why then the First Order can come back so easily. But anyways.
You know what? I have the answer to my question. I didn't remember this about Hauser. I knew that he had been in a couple of episodes, but the last time we saw him before this was when he told Crosshair, my men and I are not going to participate in this stuff any longer, when he was trying to help rescue or protect Hera's dad, Cam Syndulla. This was in the Bad Batch episode Rescue on Ryloth.
Season one.
Yes, and so he and his men were standing there talking to Crosshair about how, I won't be a part of this anymore, because now we're being asked to kill the same people that we once were sworn to protect.
Ah, okay.
And so he and his men threw down their weapons, and apparently this wasn't super obvious to me in that episode, but that's when Crosshair has them arrested. So they've all been in custody since then, and this was just part of a prisoner transfer.
So there you go.
So the crime was refusing to follow orders to kill people on Ryloth.
All right. Well, there you go.
Okay.
Well, nobody has to write in for that one answer.
Yes, this one we were able to figure out because, you know, Google foo.
Google foo. Yeah. All right. So.
Okay. Question 5.
All right. So will the Bad Batch rescue Crosshairs, or will he not survive the season? This was kind of more of a question you and I talked about, since I was kind of drawing a blank. So I'll let you answer first.
So I think that they will valiantly attempt to rescue Crosshair, because they're coming to Mount Tantus. That's what the episode Plan 99 is going to be about. And I think Plan 99, because, you know, hey, everybody, look, reverse 66 is 99, is what Tech and Echo are going to come up with to help get the other clones that are still around to join all the Rebellion clones by activating the memory chips again. Or if not activating them, once and for all, deactivating them totally in everybody's brain. And so all the clones are going to turn on the Empire simultaneously in a reverse of Order 66. But during this fight, Crosshair will valiantly sacrifice himself to save, if not the whole Bad Batch, his brothers, to save Omega specifically. And so we will see him die, because as we know in Star Wars, redemption equals death. Because you turn back to the light side, but you never stick around long enough to face trial for all the horrible stuff you did while you were Darth Vader or whatever.
Or any major villain.
Or any major villain, yeah.
Right. So I think that's a good possibility. But I think first he's going to be a Dark Trooper. I think he's going to be a Gen 1 Dark Trooper. They're going to turn him into a Dark Trooper. He's going to do the whole RoboCop resist, and they'll have to pull his helmet off, and he's still there as a human, blah, blah, blah. And he'll die in Hunter's arms. But that saves them, right?
So, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So he'll help them figure out how to stop all the Dark Troopers that are currently kicking their butts.
Something like that, right? I mean, there's a good possibility, right, to your point, because as we talked about, Gen 3 was, you know, they removed the human element, right, that we talked about. But that means there's a Gen 2 version, so that has humans in it. Right. So we'll see, right? So, and maybe that'll be like, we don't use clones, right? Because that's what they're trying to do. They use clones, and they're like, well, maybe it's not clones. We just need to use actual human beings. And then we find out, oh, it doesn't matter. It's still, you know, they're willing to resist or emotion, blah, blah, blah. Then.
Yeah. So. In order for Moff Gideon's comment about we removed all the human parts to make sense, we first have to see some with human parts. Yeah.
Yes. So I think very well Crosshairs is not going to survive this season again, but I do feel like that'll be what we have to. I mean, that would only make sense to me. So, but again, we could see he might not be, that might not be what they're planning. They might be, you know, making super clones again. I don't know. So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we do have a little bit of breaking news that I want to take a minute to talk about when it comes to Star Wars news. Normally on these episodes where we have two shows to analyze, we don't have time for Star Wars news, but this is a pretty big one. But it's also a lot of inside baseball. So if you're the kind of listener who doesn't care about who's producing what or who is directing what, you probably won't care about this tidbit, but it's interesting.
It also goes off the piggyback of what you guys are thinking that we'll be getting at. Crazy it sounds, less than a month now at Star Wars Celebration in Europe. Mm-hmm. So yes. Possibility. So
our friends over at Fandom Wire have a headline. Again, there is no definitive source for this, so take this with a enormous grain of salt. But Fandom Wire, usually pretty good track record. The headline is, Disney is reportedly firing Lucasfilm President Kathleen Kennedy if a Star Wars movie is not in theaters by Christmas of 25. We have heard Christmas of 25 as the target date for the next Star Wars motion picture many, many times. So that part makes a lot of sense.
And then they canceled everything.
And then they canceled everything, right? But also we've heard these rumors of, oh, Kathleen Kennedy is going to get fired any day now for years now. Yeah, so there's that.
She took over.
You know, right. Yeah.
7 years ago at this point, I think it's been.
But so here's the salient paragraph from Fandom Wire. According to sources, Disney has allegedly hurled an ultimatum at the Lucasfilm president, demanding a new Star Wars movie from her in 2 years' time. What's more, the studio apparently wants a finished product with all the tedious processes of production and filming wrapped up just in time for the movie to be out in cinemas by Christmas of 2025. The further rumor states that in case Kennedy is not able to hand over a completed project by the given timeline, she'd be she'd be stripped of her title as the president of Lucasfilm. And if said rumors hold any veracity whatsoever, then the producer's clock is ticking. So my first knee-jerk reaction to this is, what a bunch of pablum, because of all the other rumors of Kathleen Kennedy's going to be fired any second now. However, now that Bob Iger is back in charge, we have seen a high-profile female minority-representing producer at another Disney property already get fired this year.
And they've been making a ton of money.
Yes. that is, of course, a reference to longtime Marvel producer Victoria Alonso, who is a gay woman, a lesbian, I think. Oh, I hope I didn't just say that wrong. anyway, she is was a big-time producer at Marvel and produced a lot of really successful stuff for Marvel and went to a speech earlier this year where she defended Disney and talked about how great it was to work at a company that will represent minority groups like hers and other races and so forth in its properties like Marvel and Star Wars, and how awesome it was that they resist the public pushback against being quote unquote woke, whatever that means these days. And then like a couple weeks later, after she gave this glowing defense of Disney, they fired her. Now, supposedly Alonso was fired because she worked on a film titled Argentina 1985 for Amazon, And it was somehow a breach of contract back in 2018. And she's, you know, her lawyers and Disney's lawyers have been duking it out ever since 2018. But eventually they decided that she breached her contract of no compete by doing an Amazon project while being employed by the House of Mouse. And that's why she got fired. But other people, including her own attorney, think that that's not at all why she got fired. And it was because of her choices and decisions and being a gay Latina. Now, we won't get too much into the Marvel weeds because we don't cover that on this podcast, but you can find out more on other shows on the Fandom
True Believers Network.
However, the point being here for when we talk about Kathleen Kennedy is Iger doesn't seem to have any compunction about firing a woman and a minority if he thinks it's the right move. You know, woke policies, quote unquote, be darned. So that actually makes me think that this is much more likely to be true as a rumor about Kathleen Kennedy, because it just happened that one of the women producers got fired. And as Derek pointed out, Alonso and Marvel had been making a lot more money than Star Wars recently.
Yeah. It's hard for me to understand how true this is. Like I said, Phantom Wire is usually decent enough. They're not too clickbaity. It's hard to say, but I still stand by that, you know, we've talked about it before. Kathleen Kennedy's talked about it, at least, you know, out in public, that she's not going to want to run Lucasfilm forever, mm-hmm. that she was looking for the right time post-COVID to, I thought, retire.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I thought Indiana Jones was kind of going to be her last big hurrah, and then whatever she was going to be working on, right? And Indiana Jones comes out not that far. I mean, we've got a couple more months.
What, like point. July, right?
Yeah, so I said, a few more months then, okay? But yeah, I mean, it's due out this year. Bob Iger's back. He's got a plan, you know? They just canceled all these quote-unquote Star Wars, well, I should say quote-unquote canceled all these Star Wars movies that were in the works other than Taika Waititi, supposedly, and then they never actually formally announced Rian Johnson, but they tabled everything else. They've also talked about that they want to push more Star Wars content and less Marvel content and try to balance it out a bit more, okay? Mm-hmm. And we've talked about, hey, you got Star Wars Celebration coming up here in April. You know, it's supposed to be some big stuff because, you know, it's kind of been, you know, like you said, we need a Star Wars movie, right? And to me, I'm behind it. I like a Star Wars movie. I especially like a single movie. I don't need it to be anything tied to the Skywalker saga anymore. I don't need it in the main timeline anymore. It doesn't have to be Mandalorian timeline at this point or Rebels timeline or whatever they're going to do or Ahsoka timeline. Give me something completely – I mean, if it's at that time, it's fine, but it could be, again, completely on the other side of the galaxy in the Outer Rim, right? Give me that. Just kind of like, you know, what we've seen previously that the single movies I thought have been the best production of Disney, right? So that's, again, Rogue One and Solo, at least to my liking, right? But, you know, but again, you know, I think if Kathleen wants to step aside and do it, and we want to get the right person in, I think it'd be best to get that person in and then let them make the decisions on the next movie, right? Which at this point, it's going to take I mean, you don't even have 2 years theoretically at this point. You've got, you know, 21 months, right?
Yeah.
So unless if they're already cooking in the oven with something and they've just been throwing all the shit out there to say, hey, it's fake news and all this and keep it covered. And they're actually been, you know, cooking something in the volume in the back and nobody knows about it. Or they've been off on some, you know, Antarctica filming something and nobody else is around. Because obviously anytime they do anything in Marvel and Star Wars, the paparazzi are blitz, right? I mean, everybody's out there. You know,
we got people with drones flying over to get
yeah,
shots.
Yeah, everything, man. So it's just like, okay, so what is it anymore? I don't know, right? But I think that the next person that wants to come in will come in guns a-blazing, but again, at their own. I don't think that they want to come in guns a-blazing with all the stuff that Kathleen Kennedy's got cooking. Because again, why would you want to tie yourself to the future when she's been batting 50-50 at this point, in my opinion?
Yeah,
so
yeah. And so this could all end up, like you said, this story could end up being a total smokescreen, and it's really just setting up the whole, she's announcing her retirement. I mean, she's 69 years old. You know, I don't know about you, but I hope to be retired maybe even before I reach 69. Yeah. So, you know, and she's obviously working because she still likes it.
I mean, you could be an executive producer, but you don't need to be the president anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could step down and you still want to have a transition period with the new person, right? Give them 6 months before you hand it off.
But I'm still sticking by my prediction. Next month at Star Wars Celebration in Europe, we will see people come out on stage to announce the new movie. We might even get a teaser trailer. And I still say it will be post sequel trilogy, and Daisy Ridley will be involved. She may not be the lead, but she will be back as Rey. I don't think any other sequel characters will be returning, but I could be wrong about that. I could be wrong about the whole thing, but that's
I
my
mean, that'd be
prediction for.
pretty cool if they actually got Oscar Isaac and John Boyega back too, right?
So John seems to have dropped hints recently that he's open to it, but
Well,
Oscar
yes.
is still saying, I'm done with Star Wars. No thanks.
Yeah, but again, they threw the funny money at him, so
Yeah. But he's like he's the old grumpy Harrison Ford of their crew. Because you know
that's true.
he's the oldest one.
But he was welcomed along in the Marvel world. So if he knows that he's under Favreau and Filoni's hand, especially Favreau's, there's a good chance he'd be like, okay, or even if it's the Kevin Feige movie, right? I mean, they still haven't officially come out and said Kevin Feige or any of the other movies are done, other than Patty Jenkins has said, my stuff's been tabled, but they never said that she's done. They
Right.
just said it
And
was tabled.
Damon Lindelof recently announced that he was exiting as writer, but that doesn't mean that his script get thrown in a fire. You know, he turned it in and was like, hey, maybe he's like, I'm turning this in because I'm done and I've got other things I have to do, you know.
So, like I said, I mean, we're hoping we'll get one big, huge announcement. That would be great, right? Like I said, but we'll see. So.
Yeah. And speaking of things that we want to see what Star Wars t-shirts are we wearing this week? So, Derek, what do you got?
I'm so happy to finally show you because I know you'll appreciate this one. So as everyone knows that this past weekend, actually finished just a few hours ago, was the Lexington Comic and Toy Con, Lexicon, as they call it around here, that comes out at the end of March. And this is the first time I actually got to go to this one, just because I've always been big in Gen Con, right? And doing a bit more with gaming. This one's a bit more on the artists, cosplayers, and stuff like that of sci-fi fantasy and all that. I mean, they have everybody. And so I thought, hey, it's local. It'd be great to take Sophia for her first one, right?
Oh, yeah,
So
great.
we went out Saturday. She lasted a few hours, so kudos to her. So we did
Yeah.
it. And I posted it in the Facebook group, right? I was wearing my Boba Fett hoodie with the zip up, it has the helmet mask and stuff. Sophia was wearing her baby Yoda dress, Grogu, where it has the hood and it flips up with the ears and all that stuff. So
Yes,
we
good
were
times.
matching. But anyways, so I went to go see Roxy the Rancor, if some folks might know who that is, right? There's some wonderful folks who have made a giant statue of a Rancor. Obviously, it's not quite life size because that one was quite big.
Yeah.
The one that actually hold it would probably be closer to Mochi size, right? Which you actually seen in Bad Batch season one. Adorable and all that stuff. So I took a photo, right, and all that stuff. And it's free. Great. They do stuff for donations for Make-A-Wish and all that stuff. But they have merchandise like everything else. So, and I saw the shirts a few days ago as they were advertising it, like, hey, see us at Lexicon and all that stuff. And it's like, okay, cool. I'm definitely getting that shirt. So hopefully, for fans that are out there for Star Wars as well as Stranger Things, you might like this little mishmash.
Oh, it says Rancor Pit Club, Roxy the Rancor, and it looks like the Hellfire Club from logo from Stranger Things. That's amazing. I love it. That is awesome.
Yes, so you got a little Eddie Munson there, so I can do
Yeah.
that.
Good times. Good times.
And it's cool too because like even the sleeve's a little short too, just like you would
Yeah.
wear in
It's a
that.
very
So
80s Ringer's tee. Ringer tee. Yeah.
yes,
Good stuff. Good
so
stuff.
anyway, so we picked up quite I have other shirts I'll show too and other merchandise and stuff, but for tonight, that is the first taste of what I got at Lexicon. So
Good
Scott,
time.
what are you wearing this week?
So, friend of the show, Steven Suits, and longtime friend of myself, still got me some more stuff when he went to Galaxy's Edge. Thanks very much, Steven. And so, I have another Mandalorian themed T-shirt from Disney, and it is a Mandalorian bounty hunter seal on my shirt, with the Mythosaur skull emblazoned in the middle, black logo on a white shirt. So, I'm always happy to get a shirt that is not black predominantly, because it just seems like all the fandom shirts out there are like a black shirt with something on it, right? Anyway, but yes, this was great. And excellent to rep the Mandalorians again with the Mythosaur skull as the Mythosaur continues to be even
Yes.
more important.
And if we get big reveals, you know, we'll talk about it on the next episode of What a Piece of Junk.
We totally will. And if you guys want your own cool What a Piece of Junk t-shirt or any other fandom podcast,
which I wore at Lexicon.
So. Sweet. Way to represent. check us out over at the T Public store at tpublic.com. Just search up the user Fandom Podcast Network and you can see all kinds of cool stuff there. Derek, let folks know where they can find the show out there on the internet.
So obviously anywhere you can go out there and download or stream podcasts, you can go out there and find us specifically on the Podbean app, which is at the master feed, but you can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Play, all that cool stuff. Again, as we mentioned earlier in the episode, you can find us Facebook at What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. You can obviously find myself, Nathan, and Scott on there as well under our real names. You can email Scott in the group here at whatapieceofjunkpod@gmail.com. He also runs the Twitter handle, which is at What Wars. And then Instagram, Kyle runs that for the Fandom Podcast Network in itself. So, and then we like to do a bit of pleading or asking or begging or whatever you want to call when it comes to podcast reviews. Obviously, the call out is Apple Podcasts is the most notorious one. But again, I know Podbean has them all and all that stuff too. But just, you know, leave us a review. Appreciate it for this episode, for the entire. If you like and subscribe us, you can do that as well. But it helps us bring our content. Again, we're doing this for fun. We think we have a good time. We think we're hilarious. But if you think we suck, give us one star, and that way nobody finds us. But if you're enjoying our fun conversations we have with ourselves, and you know you want to be part of that, and I want others to appreciate What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, then please leave 5 stars so that way people can find us as they search for Star Wars, Mandalorian, Bad Batch, all the other cool shows that we'll talk about.
Yep, absolutely. And we certainly want to thank everybody out there for joining us. Thank you so much for listening to the show. Next week's show might be recorded at a weird time, so maybe release a little bit later or a little bit earlier. I'm not sure yet, because next weekend is a huge weekend in fandom, the first weekend in April. Not only do we have the release of Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, the upcoming D&D feature film, but it's also WrestleMania weekend, so I am super busy all next weekend long, so we're gonna have to do some crazy logistics.
Maybe we'll have to just record our own little three things and then mush them together.
Right, mush them together, exactly, totally. But whatever it is that we do for next week's episode, we hope you guys enjoy it, and please hit us up with your thoughts, reviews, and comments in between shows. Please always remember to respect each other and always respect each other's fandom. All right, Derek, punch it.